Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Great Expectations Working with the WebSphere MQ COS Level 2 Support Team. Today's presenters are Rick Armstrong, Douglas Bender, Blanche Ishida, Beverly Kingsley, Kenneth Langhorn, Mark Romack, Greg Woods, and Sigmund Sokoski. At this point in time, I would like to pass the presentation over to Rick.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. Joseph, if you go to slide 2, please, that would be great. We're grateful that you're here and participating in this technical exchange with us. This is really your technical exchange as we try to put together information that would benefit you and your job and make your job just a little bit easier. We hope that's what we accomplished today. As Joseph said, he went through a lot of speakers. We have 7, I guess, or 8 of us. I can't remember now what exactly the number is, but we're all working level 2 for WebSphere MQ for ZOS. And the things that we're going to be going over today are of course, WebSphere MQ related, but they're also, in particular, ZOS related. So some of the things we'll be going over is, when working with Level 2, what's some of the best practices that both of us can take to help each other solve the problems quicker? And we'll also be going through some of the components that we see the most problems in and some guidelines set up for those components and must-gather documentation to help us solve the problems quicker. And then we'll go through some closing comments and provide you with some references for all this information that we talked about. Joseph, let's go to slide 3, please. And this is just a list of the presenters that Joseph read off just a few minutes ago and what each of the presenters will be talking about. That's just there for your information. Slide 4, please, Joseph. So what are some of the best practices dealing with communication to when you're working with Level 2? And some of the things that we look for that's helpful to us, Level 2, is when you open a problem record or an SR record or PMR, that you describe the problem that you're seeing. And I know that seems basic, but we get a lot of problems that we are really not sure what exactly the problem is. So if there is a message backing up on a queue or channel not running or an ad band, you know, what is the problem? And some things that we like to know is this something new, or has this been occurring for a long time? And if it's something new, what is new? Or if it's been, you know, everything's been running fine, and all of a sudden you solve this problem, has anything changed, of course? That's one of our first questions. Has anything changed? You know, provide the queue names, the channel names, the getting and putting applications, as much detail as you can, but not, of course, overpowering us with a lot of information. And then something we'd like to know is the environment that you're working in. You know, what is the operating system level? And if it's another host involved, what's the operating system of that sender receiver, if that's appropriate? The MQ version and levels of both sides, and any other products that might be involved, whether it's WAS or DB2 or KIX or IMS, any of those kinds of things would be helpful to us. And then how you prefer to be contacted. Is the SR tool what your preference is? Would you prefer an email or both? Some people might want both. If you'd like a phone call, please let us know you'd like a phone call and provide a primary number and a backup number. That would be helpful if we can't get a hold of you. It's a primary number. And an alternate contact if you're not available. And then want to have frank and open discussion about the problem. And one of the things that we'd like to iterate here or reiterate is that there's only one problem in each service request or problem record. A lot of times we start down the path and something else may come up in your mind or another problem may crop up and you want to introduce that into the same problem record. Well, that becomes very confusing for us and for you if there's more than one problem record more than one problem in a problem record, trying to decipher which one we're talking about at any one particular time. So we like to keep one problem per problem record. And then what is the business impact of the problem? You know, is it affecting production? Is it affecting development? Is it affecting your test environment? what is the business impact? Because that also helps us to prioritize our work. You know, if you have a production environment, even though the severity might be lower, but it's in a production environment, it may be more important than someone that's maybe having a problem in a test environment. So it helps you to tell us the impact of what the problem is to you. And then I want to include here a link to the Webster MQ support portal, where you can go out and you can search for, you know, solutions to problems that you're having. You can look at tech notes. You can find APARs, look at documentation of all types and sorts. And you can do searches there for, so if you're getting an error message, you can do a search for the error message and maybe find a solution for your problem without even opening up a problem record. So we'd like to direct all of you to that support portal and get to know it and become friends with it and use it a lot, because it can be very helpful. And if it's some way that we can make it more helpful to you, let us know. I'm going to turn this over to Blanche just now, and she's going to continue with some best practices.
Thank you, Rick. Joseph, let's go to slide 5, please. Okay. Continuing on, as Rick said, if you've already gone to our support portal and you've done some searches and you haven't found a hit for the problem you're seeing, then you're going to need to send in some documentation. So we'll just go over a few best practices as far as sending documentation to the support center. We prefer FTP, and that you would use to terse all the data sets, even if they're small files. It helps us if it's terse. When we receive the files, then it'll go back in the proper format. This is especially for job logs. People think they're small, and they send them as text, and it'll come in, but it's wrapping, and it's basically unreadable for us. So even if it's a small file or dumps, go ahead and terse those. There will be exceptions occasionally when we might ask you to send something in as text or as a zip file, but generally speaking, we want a terse data set. And if you need encryption, or the new tool is this MTFTP tool, that's available, that you can use that as well, and there's a link to the tool there. In the file naming convention, this is important that you follow this naming convention, which is it includes the service record or service request or the PMR number, and the format you see there, 9999, the first 5 digits being the PMR number, and the second 3999 is the branch number, and in most cases for the U.S. customer, 000 would be the country code, and it would be something different if you're from a different country code. Again, when you use the correct file naming convention, then your PMR will be automatically updated. And again, use, you know, an extension that would describe the file that you're sending. And in this example, it's like the master job log, and the .trs will tell us that it's been terse. And this will help us. We've seen examples where if it's in the wrong PMR number, then there's a delay in getting into problem resolution because we can't find the doc. Okay, next bullet. What is the documentation? And again, when you send us documentation, if you would update the PMR and if you would identify each piece of doc that you're submitting to us, this again will help us in identifying the pieces of doc that we want to look at first. And if you would put, like, you know, the extension .dump or .joblog or whatever the file is, if you would identify that piece of doc. And use the correct directory. And for WebSphere M2, it's the 2IBM/MVS. That's the directory that we would put our documentation at when you send it to us. And, however, if you sent doc, say, to WebSphere, to WAS, you don't have to move that doc. If you would just identify in the PMR where that doc is, that would help us again, that we know where to go and pull that doc from. Okay? And there's a link there on exchanging information with the support center. Go to slide 6. Okay. The first topic that we're going to talk about today is add-ins. And basically for WebSphere MQ for ZOS, there are two system add-in types, 5 Charlie 6 and a 6 Charlie 6. And the 5 Charlie 6, as you can see here, is for where MQ has detected an internal error and has terminated either a TCB or a user-connected task. In these, when you see the 5 Charlie 6, generally there might be another error or abin prior to the 5 Charlie 6. Go to slide 7, please. Okay, the second abend for MQ is a 6 Charlie 6. And in this case, with the 6 Charlie 6, there's a severe error, and generally, you know, the queue manager might be terminated as well. And even with the 6 Charlie 6, you want to look to see if there are preceding abends or errors. And you'll also see generally the CSQ V086 Easy error code in the job log indicating that the queue manager has terminated. And for more information regarding the abends, there's a link to the info center. Go to slide 8, please. And here I just have an example. This is one that we see quite often for especially in the channel initiator. You'll see an abend 5 Charlie 6 with the reason code of 00EZ7014FOX. Saying an internal error has occurred. And when we see this, you know, people send in that dump, which is fine, but generally, again, there might be another a previous error. So, and it's normally the previous error that is the dump that we need to look at. So if you would review your MQ, the job logs or the syslog or in LogRec for the software records, for any previous abends, and if you have those dumps, it would be helpful if you send those along as well. Go to slide 9. Okay, what documentation do you need to pursue an abend? Need the job logs, the master and chin, and here I have chin and chinit, and throughout the presentation you'll see there will be references to both the chin and the chinit, and we're just going to use those as synonymous, meaning the channel initiator. So we would want those job logs. And this is documentation to start with. Any dumps that was generated at the point of a failure in LogRec from a couple hours prior to the abend. More and more what we're seeing is with other products being involved, there are other indications of an error, and WebSphere MQ might just be a victim, a follow-on abend, and we really need to see the abend that occurred first. So with LogRec, that helps us identify the first error. And again, the ZOS, the operating system syslog, and again, if we can get that as well for a couple hours prior to the abend, so we can see if there's any other, not just MQ, but any other associated products that MQ is interfacing with. If there are any errors, then we can look at the syslog to help us determine the problem. And then you can check the syslog for IEA 611i and IEA 911e messages to see if you have a complete or partial dump. Because with a partial dump, we may not have all the areas of storage that we need to do problem diagnosis. Let's go to slide 10. Okay, and again, this is just talking about dumps may be suppressed by the dump analysis and elimination by DAE. And there is it's referring to the ZOS Diagnosis Tools and Service Aids Manual. And if you look at the Abend Tech Note, which I have a link to at the end of this section, then there's also a link to this diagnosis manual. Go to slide 11. Okay, and maybe I should have started with this first at the beginning of the Abend section where I said search for known problems. I mean, because if you find something, then obviously there's no need to submit a PMR. So I'm just going to go over a sample of what you can use for a search argument. So if you have what you would use is the abend code, reason code, and a program name listed in the dump. And for example, in this dump title, you can see CSQ1 is the queue manager name, and ABN equals 0 Charlie 4 for an abend 0 Charlie 4 and with a reason 11. And if you look, and you'll see that we have the name of CSQM-SMH1 and also an offset into that module of 432. So if we go to slide 12. And using that information just from the dump title, you can go out to the support portal and do a search. And these are just some sample ABAN search arguments, again, using the module name CSQ-SMH1. And you can see there's different ways. In the first one, I just took the ABN and the 0Charlie4, just like in the dump title, which returned three hits, and the correct hit was PM16841. Now, just by the second search argument, by using the module name and the offset, just returned the one hit, which was, again, PM16841. And then the third argument is the module name, and then the spelling out the word ABAND, and the 0Charlie4 actually returned five hits, which one of them, again, was PM16841. For further information is for troubleshooting data and what you can look at for ABANs in WebSphere MQ for ZOS, there's the link to that tech note. So there's more information, and there are additional links like to the services and tools manual for MVS. Okay, so next I'm going to turn it over to Kenneth Langhorne, who will discuss hang weight loops.
We're on slide 13, Joseph. Good day, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well. Basically, hang weight loop can all be pursued pretty much the same way. Whenever it appears that MQ series is in a hang, a weight, or a loop, the basic data we want to always capture are the job logs for the master and chin. We definitely want to get a dump during the condition. And log rec data probably going back 30 minutes to an hour before that. Now, if this happens to be a recreatable situation, or if you have time, we would also like for you to gather a GTF trace, and if possible, have the MQ series master internal trace and the chin trace on as well. That would help us isolate it further. One of the challenges is when someone comes in with one of these three, they'll come in and say it's a weight or a loop or a hang. And until we go through the dump, we really can't be sure which of those problems we're dealing with within MQ series. The other challenge is that sometimes it may be somebody else eating up CPU or some problem outside of us. So whenever, whether it's MQ series or some other product on ZOS, it appears to be in a hang, a weight, or a loop, you need to capture this minimal data, and I like for people to also check CPU utilization at the time to see if you see somebody else eating up a lot of CPU, because you may just not be getting dispatched. We have a link at the bottom of this page that summarizes the doc you need for these conditions. And at this time, I would like to pass the call over to Rick.
Hey, thanks, Kenneth. Joseph, we could go to slide 14, please. We're going to spend a few moments talking about the tracing available for WebSphere MQ. There's basically two types of trace, one for the queue manager itself and one for the chin. And these are internal traces for each of the address spaces. And they're really not designed for customer use. They're designed for level 2 and level 3 to look at internally what's happening for the queue manager or the channel initiator or both, and for the internal processing that's going on there. So, you know, you can run them if you like. You can look at them if you like. But it's really, if you don't have the source code to use, you know, to bounce it against, it's really not very useful. But it is useful, very useful for us, and we will ask for it from time to time or ask you to provide it for us for problem diagnosis when we can't see what's happening or what's causing the problem from a snapshot like a dump. So let's about the queue manager trace and the capture trace. And there's essentially two places that you can capture. One is to internally to the queue manager address space, and there's the commands to start and to stop it. And then the other way to capture the queue manager trace is with GTF on ZOS, and there's the commands to stop and to start it. Now, GTF has its own set of problems because the queue manager can write the trace records to GTF. If GTF is not able to run, say that it's starved for CPU or it's swapped out or whatever, GTF can't capture the trace records that the queue manager is writing. So it may miss some of those. So it's very important that when you're capturing queue manager trace to GTF, that GTF is able to run when it needs to run to capture the trace records. The other piece that comes along with that is the data set that GTF is writing the trace records to. GTF will not use secondary extents for the data set. So the primary allocation has to be large enough to hold the complete set of, you know, the complete size of the data set. So you can't have secondary extents. Well, you can have secondary extents, but GTF will not write to them. It only writes to the primary. Let's go to slide number 15, please, Joseph. And then, so let's talk a little bit about the chin trace. The chin trace is the command to start and stop it is there for you to read. And the chin trace is captured only one place, and that's to the data space that's associated with the chin address space, which is CSQXTRDS. So it's very important, of course, when you get a chin trace, or if we get the queue manager trace internally, that we get a dump so that we can actually look at the trace records. And when you get a dump for the chin, the dump has to include the data space of the chin. So another piece of very important information for the trace is the size of the trace table. So for the master, you can change the trace table size by this command, set system track table, say 500. 500 is a number of 4K blocks, and that can be anywhere from 1 to 999. 500 is an example, 300 may be sufficient, but of course it needs to be something sufficient enough to hold enough trace data for us to capture. And if we ask for trace, we'll probably most likely tell you the size of the trace table to set. And then for the chin, it's alter queue manager tracks table and then the number. And the number is the number of megabytes from 2 to 2048. And the default for the chin is 2 megabytes, which is not very much data. So you should always set the chin trace table larger than the default, which, of course, is 2 megabytes. So that's about it for the MQ trace. And for all the components we're talking about, the queue manager or the chin trace or both may be important that we may ask for this trace. So it's kind of important that you're familiar with how to capture it and where it goes and how to process it to get it to us. Let's go to slide 16, please, Joseph. The performance, the question always comes up, okay, if I run trace, what's the performance hit for that? And that's a very valid question. And it can be significant running trace for the queue manager or the chin or both. So we put together a technical exchange last year and talked about tracing and the performance impacts of tracing. And that the link for that is on this page here. And I would encourage you to go and listen to that performance impact or the tracing technical exchange. And it includes a lot of the details, and it hits all platforms, not just ZOS. So that might be something useful for you to listen to if you didn't listen to it last year when we presented it. Okay, Joseph, let's go to slide 17. I want to change gears here for just a second and talk about channels. Of course, the channel is the communication tool between queue managers. And along with that comes a whole host of problems. And something useful for us to know if we're going to talk about channel issues is what is the network topology? What does it look like between queue managers? Is it TCP/IP? Is it OU6.2? Of course, most of the problems that we see deal with TCP/IP. I don't know. I assume that's because most of you are running in a TCP/IP network and very little OU6.2 networking these days. But that's just a guess. But if there is a problem and across between communication between the queue managers, does other communications work across that same path? Can you ping, if it's TCP/IP, can you ping from one host to the other? Do other protocols work, like FTP or Telnet? Because remember, MQ is just using the TCP/IP as a communication tool between the two across the channel. And, you know, we work closely, or you guys may end up working closely with your network engineers if you don't manage the network, and probably most of you don't. But the problem could very well be under the WebSphere MQ. And what I mean by under is in the stack, or the TCP/IP stack, or VTAM stack, if we're using LU 6.2. Let's go to slide number 18, please. So is there a message associated with the problem? And if there is a message, is that what does the message tell you? Because if TCP/IP is, if, let's say that the channel is, you have a sender channel sending, trying to send a message to a receiver channel, and it tries to send, MQ is going to try to send the data, and if TCP/IP is not able to send the data, it's going to give a return code back to WebSphere MQ. And the message that's printed out in the channel most of the times will give you that error code, and that error code can tell you a lot. It tells you whether the connection was reset. If it's reset, you know, a lot of the problems that TCP/IP is going to report is not necessarily a WebSphere MQ problem, but it's a problem underneath of that. So WebSphere MQ, or the channel initiator, might just be the vehicle for reporting the problem that's happening in TCP/IP. So TCP/IP doesn't really throw a whole lot of errors, but it reports to the applications using it what it, what it's had difficulty with. So what type of channel is it? Is it a new channel? Is it an existing channel that's been working and all of a sudden now it's not working? Is it a sender, receiver, shared cluster channel, or something else? And what kind of documentation would we like to see? Well, for the most part, we for sure want to see the channel initiator job log, displays of the channel or channels involved, and we may ask for a chin trace and or a chin dump. Well, if we ask for a trace, we're always going to ask for a dump because that's how we see the trace. But those may be optional. We wouldn't ask you to get those unless we thought we really needed them, because it's probably going to be disruptive for you to be able to take a dump of the channel. It's certainly going to maybe disruptive for your production environment to start the trace there. So we don't ask those unless we absolutely need them, but if we need them, please trust us that we will need them. Okay, I'm going to turn this time over now to Mark, who's going to talk to you about another component.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rick. And Joseph, if you could move to slide 19, that would be good. And Rick had mentioned that when you get channel errors, a lot of times the error reported back is because of something happening at another layer. And for, in this case, SSL or secure sockets layer, the same is true. We'll report or output messages with errors in them, but that's because we most times got an error back from the operating system SSL component indicating that there was a problem there. So basically, secure sockets layer provides authentication, confidentiality, and integrity for link layer communications. And you can use it as a standalone entity, or you can use it in conjunction with the security exit if you like, but all on its own, it provides most of the link layer security that most folks need. Most of the time, if SSL doesn't work, it's because there's a problem with the configuration and setup, or perhaps the certificate queuing has not been set up as it should be, or one of the queue manager SSL attributes hasn't been coded the way it ought to have been. So for cases where you think that there may have been a problem with the security with certificate setup, typically we'll ask for displays of the certificate queuing involved. And depending on the product you're using, because you can use any number of external security managers such as RACF, Top Secret, or ACF2, the commands that you'll use to provide output from any of those security products is going to vary. And we include a tech note that's locatable on the MustGather site. The number is 1205523, but that'll give you the commands needed to get the security output for SSL, depending on the product that you're using. The only security product I know of where you actually have to run a trace in order to get a certificate information is CA's ACF2. So for that, we include in the MustGather site information on how to run that trace. When you're resolving cases that involve SSL, it's best to try to get the SSL connection working in one direction and then try to work on getting it working in the other direction in the event that neither side works. Because the amount of certificate data exchange can vary depending on the level of ZOS, an SSL configuration that might have worked at a lower level of ZOS might not work at a higher level. And I'll give you an example of that. In ZOS 1.12, the range were tightened a bit for the SSL chain of trust, where they have much stricter requirements for whether the chain is complete or not on either end of the of a ZOS secure connection. So if you find a case where you migrate ZOS and suddenly it doesn't work at 1.2, you're going to want to make sure that you have all the intermediate certificates installed on the side that's reporting problem, and as well check the other side to make sure its ring is complete as well. And you simply do that by importing the certificates into the key ring, and then you'll use the appropriate rec desert add command to add the certificate to the recf key ring. Now, while you can use SSL for many things, including non-repudiation through digital signing, all the functions of SSL don't have to be employed just because you have certificates in place. If you use a cipher spec that's null, that specifies a null in the name, then this means that you're not going to encrypt any data that gets passed. You'll just be using the identification and integrity components of SSL. Now, for MQ on ZOS, we don't support the OCSP protocol, which became available a couple of years ago. SSL and ZOS continues to use LDAP in order to interrogate the certificate revocation list, and you'll also want to know that just because the certificate has expired doesn't mean that the certificate is going to be automatically added to a CRL. That's a manual process, and typically you don't add a certificate to a CRL just because it's expired. You add it because you think that the private key associated with the certificate has been compromised. So you'll want to make sure that the CRL is up to date based on that. So in general, if you do receive an error that a local check has failed for a certificate, that means that locally you're missing a certificate that the other side should have reported to you. And similarly, if you receive an error that a remote check has failed, that means that the remote side is missing a certificate that your side should have provided to the remote end. And that's a problem we see quite often. Typically, if the chain of trust looks good or can be corrected, that will fix those sort of issues. Could we go to foil 20, Joseph, please? Okay, and then this is sort of related to SSL, but this is security, which encompasses a much wider range that SSL falls into. MQ can offer all sorts of security. We offer security for connections, commands, queues, our subsystems, and any resources that are vital to the execution of queue manager functions. So typically, you want to make sure you can confirm the configuration when you're having security issues. The MQ security manual documents all the basic tasks that you'll need for the product, and we provide links to give specifics on how you can implement the different parts of your MQ security. For instance, if you take a look at the list of security tasks in the MQ security manual, that will give the specific command examples, for instance, for the rdefine command, which will grant administrative authority to any task that runs in a queue manager. So if you do contact level 2, make sure that you run through all the setup tasks for security in the manual before giving us a call. That way we'll know whether we need to revisit the tasks and how they were performed or not. If all the manual tasks have been completed, then there's usually a fair amount of documentation that we need to collect because we're not sure where the issue could be then. And depending on the problem, you'll at a minimum need to provide the MQ job logs, log rec output, and if the problem becomes more challenging, then we'll start to ask for maybe recf audit traces or master trace or chin trace. So whatever we ask for will really depend on what the sort of problem is that we're trying to resolve involving security. Typically, security also ends up being a configuration or procedural issue, but we have to work through it to try to find that out. And then also foil 21, Joseph, please. Okay. And then for Western MQ clustering, clustering can tend to be a confusing topic for a lot of folks. The one good thing about clustering that I tend to say is that most of the things that explain how clusters work are documented in the MQ Queue Manager Clusters Manual, and it's a fair-sized book, but a good read through it will provide a wealth of understanding about how clustering works and why things that don't seem to be working as they should actually are working as designed. For instance, you may have set up a cluster where you see that an auto-defined cluster sender channel was built, and the name associated with that channel might be incorrect, and you may want to try to go ahead and delete that cluster sender channel, but found that you were not able to. And so the question becomes, is this something that I should even be able to do? Is it possible? Maybe it's a bug. Should I open a PMR? And reading the manual gives a better insight into the few ways that you can get rid of an auto-defined channel, including using the refresh cluster command to get rid of it. So there's a lot of caveats to clustering, but I feel good that the book covers a lot of those caveats and will help somebody understand whether they're looking at a bug or just a design behavior. And the other thing is that the cluster manual also has a great section on resolving problems that I myself will refer to if I'm working with a customer on clustering. I'll go through it to see if the steps in there will get the customer out of the condition that the cluster's gotten into. And as well, we've got a plethora of DCF tech notes that document a huge percentage of the clustering issues that pop up every day. For example, a queue manager may have been reintroduced into the cluster a second time, and now when you do a display +QMGR, you see two instances of the same queue manager in the cluster, and you're not sure whether your cluster data is going to queue manager A or queue manager B, so you want to know, how do I get rid of that queue manager? And so we try to document with tech note items just how to eliminate the queue manager instance that you don't want anymore. As a general rule, when we solve with a cluster problem, I try to get display +QMGR all output, because that gives me a good level set of whether the cluster is healthy, whether there have been any definition errors that might have introduced a problem, and we can usually fix those without going to an escalation on the PMR. And if that information is enough, then we'll, as always, collect job logs and master and chin dumps and traces if we need to take the problem a little bit further, or if we've discovered that there's a new bug. And first and foremost for clustering, if you can bring all the clustering code up to the highest code level, that eliminates a lot of problems, because a lot of clustering issues can exhibit at themselves at the same time, and it can look very similar. So if we can bring the queue manager to a real good level of cluster code, then that eliminates us having to try to discover the same problem that's been corrected previously. That's all I've got, Joseph. I'm going to turn over to Greg Woods, and he's going to start on FOIL 22. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mark. Joe, can we go to FOIL 22? Today I will be discussing must-gather documentation for shared queues. As you know, shared queues are the MQ objects that are shared amongst queue managers and can be written to by way of the queue manager, and multiple queue managers can write to those objects. The documentation needed for basic problem source identification for shared queues are listed. System log, chin job log, and master job log. A majority of the messages will be in the master job log written by the coupling facility software component in MQ. These messages will be prefixed with string CSQE. IXL con connection results can also be found in the master job log. Their messages are prefixed with string IXL. The system log will contain messages relevant to the state of the coupling facility and its structures that could be relevant to the problem being reported. And the chin job log will show information regarding the shared channel states. Dump taken at point of failure. These dumps will be in the system dump data set. From this dump, we can extract reports such as the coupling facility manager report. This report is produced by using verb exits shipped with MQ. The coupling facility manager report will contain connection status to the various CF structures associated with the shared queues. Coupling facility structure dump can be used for dumping the MQ administration structure and application structures. These are list structures, and we will go over the parameters to the CF dump command a bit later. Optional documentation are the MQ internal trace and MQ GTF trace. The MQ internal trace included in the dumps taken at point of failure will show the results of coupling facility manager modules and will also show the results of XCF and XES list services that are used to interface with the CF structures. The MQ GTF trace will show from an MQ perspective results from the MQ puts and MQ gets issued from applications when they're operating against the shared queues. Bill, can we move to slide 23? Capturing the facility, coupling facility structure dump is done by issuing the dump command with the structure list, STRLIST, dump option or subcommand. As a reply to the dump command message IEE094D, we can supply the structure list parameters and all of its subparameters, starting with the structure name, STR name. This parameter is where we specify the actual structure name to be dumped. And for MQ, this will consist of the structure name will consist of the queue sharing group name and the application structure name. And those two will be merged together. So if the queue sharing group is named CSQ1 and the, in this case, application structure is named application, you will merge those to arrive at a structure name of CSQ1 application. List num equal all will dump the list controls for lists associated with the structure, and it will also dump the list entry controls. Adjunct equal capture causes the adjunct area to be dumped, and in it you will find the message keys to the MQ messages. Entry data equal unsere is where the message data for a queue would be stored. Event QS, this is showing that triggering has occurred and the when a list transitions from empty to non-empty is when you can expect to see information there. EMC controls equal all is specified to dump all event monitor controls, which typically represent events when a list transitions from empty to non-empty and can be seen under heading Event Monitor Controls Detail Report. We can go to slide 24, Joe. Other diagnostic output for shared queues can be generated from within the product itself, such as issuing the display queue command. This command is used to display attributes of queues relating to CF structure, such as the CF struct attribute. The display group command to display information about the queue sharing group, such as whether all the queue managers that belong to the group are active or inactive, and the names of all the group, the names of all the queue managers that belong to the group. We can also use the display CF struct command to display attributes of one or more CF structures, and we can use the display CF status command to display the status of an application CF structure. And some of the statuses can consist of summary status information for application structures in the queue sharing group, connection status information for each queue manager in the queue sharing group for each matching application structure name, and the backup status information or backups taken for each matching application structure name. That concludes the diagnostic information for shared queues. I will now pass it along to Beverly Kingsley for IMS and performance.
Thank you, Greg. Joseph, could we go to page slide 25, please? First of all, I'd like to start off with a quick introduction to WebSphere MQ with IMS. MQ has an adapter interface into IMS and a bridge interface into IMS. With the adapter, an IMS trigger manager is running in the background, ready to start the IMS transaction when applications use the MQ API to put messages to a specific MQ queue. With the bridge, messages arrive on a specific bridge queue, and MQ then uses the IMS OTMA interface to pass these messages to IMS
IMS applications use IMS Get Unique and Insert Calls to access MQ messages. Joseph, let's move to the next slide, 26, please. Problems reported to us while using these interfaces are mostly in the areas listed here. Connectivity, for example, MQ not connecting to a partner or messages not flowing to IMS. Performance, an example is slow response. Security, there are three levels of security checking when using MQ OTMA Bridge. One, connections from MQ to IMS during client bid. Two, user ID validation in MQ. And three, the OTMA security. There are problems with T-pipes in cases of the bridge and also format errors. In the case of the adapter, incorrect linking of the language interface tab can result in OC4s. You can have problems with library authorizations. This happens with both the adapter and the bridge. You can use the IMS DD statement, DFS ESL, to alleviate this. Now, if you have searched the WebSphere MQ support site for known problems and you still need further help, then please provide the appropriate documentation as described, starting on slide 27. We need the master and chain job logs, also the system logs, in case there are other messages issued from related components, and any dump or dumps generated as a result of the problem. An example is the OC4 I just mentioned, any other bins mentioned earlier in the presentation. Next, slide 28, please. In the situation where the problem can be recreated, firstly, start MQ trace going to GTF using the job name parameter to get trace from only the affected address spaces. In this case, the MQ master address space, the IMS control region, and any IMS message or batch or fast path region involved with this problem. Secondly, recreate the problem. Thirdly, take a dump of the address spaces involved, or in the case where there is a message issued to the log, a slip trap can be used to take a dump. And lastly, stop all traces. Please save the IMS online log data sets used during the problem period and the associated IMS region's job log in case IMS support help is needed. Next slide, 29, please. Please provide us with as much details about the problem as possible, since the more information you supply, the better chance of a quick resolution. For instance, provide any CSQQ error message if using the adapter interface, or CSQ2 error message if using the bridge, or any error code or feedback code issued. We'll need a name of the IMS queue. And some things you can check depending on the symptoms or is the IMS system running and connected. For the bridge, look for the CSQ2010I successful connection message or the unsuccessful connection message, CSQ2011I. For the adapter, is the IMS subsystem started? Is the trigger monitor running or is triggering set on the MQQ? For the bridge, is OTMA started in IMS or is OTMA queue in MQ defined with an XCF storage class and so forth? Let's continue to the next slide, please. 30. If the symptoms indicated that messages do not appear to be flowing to IMS, as part of the documentation, please provide a copy of the stock message. If it is a bridge T-pipe issue, we will need the output from the T-pipe displayed listed here. Okay. Tech note number 1242366, the link stated here, provides troubleshooting hints and tips and detail instructions and collecting the documentation required to diagnose the various MQ-IMS bridge and adapter problems. So for more information on the MQ-IMS interface will be covered in future presentation. Next, we move on to talk about performance documentation required, starting with slide 31. Okay. Performance analysis and problem determination depends on the type of performance issues perceived. Okay. It requires you to define goals, to be aware of different factors that can affect it, and what techniques might be available to improve it. Performance is associated with throughput, the time expected to process the transaction, measurement, the expected response time, availability, the application. MQ or your applications have to be available when required. IPC, high CPU loop, causing excessive computer resources to be used. When it comes to diagnosing performance issues, MQ support has a limited scope on what it can and cannot help you with. Strictly speaking, we deal only with defects in IBM product code, but we'll also help you with most configuration issues that lead to poor performance. But our scope does not extend to application design or topology architecture issues that result in poor performance. Okay. Your first level of investigation should be to use the recommendation given in Support Path MP16, the Capacity Planning and Tuning Guide for WebSphere MQ for ZOS. The link to it is provided in the reference topic of this presentation. Work with your internal performance team to use monitoring tools to identify the problem area. Otherwise, consider using performance services such as IBM Performance Services. Okay, next slide, 32, please. Some techniques you can use to identify the problem area are: you can collect performance data. You can start MQ traces to send MQ statistic type 115 and accounting type 116 records to SMS. Use the support packs mentioned here to print, interpret, and understand the data collected. Make use of monitoring tools such as Tiffly, OmegaMon, or Strobe product to identify the problem areas. If you need further help from MQ support and you think it may be an MQ defect, the required documentation starts on the next slide, 33. If feasible, increase the MQ trace table. Start MQ global or internal trace. Take a dump of master and chin address spaces during the problem period. And on the next slide, 34, we also need master and chin job logs and any monitoring data and or reports collecting during the investigation. Okay. If MQ SMS data was collected, we prefer you send us the raw data for analysis. So if you have performance reports to send, please make sure you identify the problem areas you are addressing. There is a performance tech note number 129-1192 stated here that provides troubleshooting hints and tips and detailed instructions on collecting the documentation required. There will be WebSphere MQ performance presentation scheduled this year, so please keep an eye open for it. At this point, I'll pass the presentation to Doug Bender, who will continue with the CICS topic on slide 35. Doug?
Thank you, Beverly. I'm going to cover quickly the CICS adapter and bridge. The adapter, you have to be on the same LPAR as MQ to connect to it. And MQ can connect to multiple CICSs, but CICS only connects to one queue manager. and it's used to communicate from CICS to use MQ interface calls. The bridge is used for old legacy applications that were run by 3270. Displays now can be run by MQ messages. Okay, Joseph, page 36. When TIPS Transaction Server 3.2 came out, or higher, the component, the KIX adapter and KIX bridge was moved from MQ over to CICS. So if you're running at that level, I have included the must gather from the CICS support site, and when you open a PMR to not have delay, if you're running KIX 3.2 or higher, it should be open against the KIX component. Okay, that's it for that slide. Slide 37, please. If you're running KIX 3.1 or below, the documentation we usually need is the master and CICS logs. I usually add in the chin logs also. And any error, if you have a dump generated on the error, we would need that. If you're seeing something like slope processing or a hang, then when you collect the dump for that, please ensure that you collect both the master and the CSS job name in the same dump. The rate CPUs run now, if you don't do that, it's very hard to match things up if they're taken as two separate dumps. And, of course, they would be terced and sent in. I'm now going to turn this over to Zygmunt, page 38.
Yes, we're on slide 38. Thank you. How are you doing? I'm going over to MustGather for Java and JMS. Okay, what's your MQ Java base? It's a collection of Java classes that allow Java programs to interact with MQ servers, and the MQ classes for JMS services also refer as WebSphere MQ JMS, or a set of Java classes that enable JMS applications to access WebSphere MQ systems. Next slide, please, slide 39. All right. Throughout this whole presentation, we've been talking about when you open up a problem, you got to state it clearly what the problem is. And basically, that's what this slide says. So please provide the level of all software, including of the problem scenario. It's very important. Okay, slide 40, please. Okay. Some of the things we ask, you know, when we ask to specify the problem clearly is, you know, is the application running as a client or in bind mode? As we know, there's a difference between clients and bind mode. I'm not going to list them during this talk. I'll hit some of the quick bullets here. If you're using JMS or Java, it's important to know that. As you look back on slide 38, there was a link to our using Java manual, which goes in more detail, the difference between Java and using JMS, and you can refer to that. Also, we want to know what type of queue you're using. We are using a local queue or share queue. If it's a share queue, is it private? And also, if you're going to WebSphere application server. Next slide, please. Okay, if you are going to WebSphere application server, because most of the problems are configuration problems and setup problems that we've been saying throughout this whole presentation, there's a nice way to jar up your jar files for WebSphere to send us so we can understand a clear picture of how you're interacting with WebSphere. And I listed those jar commands that you would use on this slide right here. Next slide, please, slide 42. Okay, slide 42. As we also mentioned, you know, things you can check before you open a problem, and that's what this slide is basically going over. I mean, if you're one thing I do want to mention with our new version of MQ Java, MQ version 7, the jar files, MQ jar files are being used. They're now being provided within WebSphere itself. So we would need the level to know what version of jar file you're using, so you would have to go look in WebSphere for that information. Also, things you can check is verify your queue manager and listening ports. You can also verify your channel connections. And you can simply test these by using you can test your client or binding connections by running the MQ IDP program or or just pinging the server itself. So at this point, I'm going to turn it back. I'm going to go to slide 43 and turn it back to Doug for closing statements.
Thank you. I just wanted to quickly go through the reminders from everything that was covered. And for us, communication is the key. Tell us everything that you know. Let us know the levels of all the software. Is this a one-time problem? Is this a problem that's happened many times? That helps us to better understand how we can help you. And when in doubt, always TERS and FTP, unless we otherwise tell you to. And since each component of WebSphere has its own special things, follow the must-gather that we have provided. Okay, page 44. Several times in the pitch, it was talked about the support portal. That is the first item on this reference page. And the must-gather is the third one down that has a pointer to all the other must-gathers. And for exchanging data with IBM, look at the second one. It'd probably be a good idea to bookmark these in whatever your favorite browser is. Okay, Joseph, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you to our speakers for a wonderful presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Aaron Mayo, your line is open.
Thanks for the presentation. I really appreciate it. It's very lots of information provided. Thank you so much. I'm sorry, I was kind of multitasking when I joined this meeting. So I try to catch up the beginning of this print. So the question is, all this instruction is mostly for the mainframe system or for all the platforms like Windows, Unix, for the MQ?
It was put together for mainframe, DOS.
So it's mostly for the mainframe ZOS.
Correct.
Raju Pali, your line is open.
Hi, this is Raghu here from Amerpress. Thanks a lot for your presentation and I really appreciate it. I have a question on the support. Generally, we do the upgrades over the weekend, and if we want any support from the level 2, I mean, from your team over the weekend, I mean, is it something which we can tell in advance and let you know, guys, and get your support over the weekend? Because our, in a business day, if we run into issues, it's a very big loss to the financial services company like us. So we want to know, will you guys be able to be available over a weekend if we tell you in advance for any kind of support for an upgrade or migration?
Yeah, this is Mark again. Yeah, we're always available 24/7 support. What we actually see sometimes is that customers on a Thursday or Friday will open up a ticket to the support center saying that they do have plans for the weekend just to give us an alert, and that way it gives the duty programmer a heads up that he can expect a possible call, and so he'll maybe do some research beforehand to prepare himself for that. So if you give us a PMR in advance, that helps, or, you know, you can queue in the day of the problem, and then we can also return a call within a relatively short amount of time to try and assist you in your migration effort or whatever the problem is.
This is Rick. I'd like to add to that, though. We only provide Severity 1 system down support over the weekend. So from 8 p.m. Friday Eastern time until 4 p.m. Sunday Eastern time, it's only for system down.
Okay. Yeah, mainly during the upgrades, that's what we were running the issues. Suppose we want to back out because it's a huge system wherein it takes like six hours for us to back out, and it involves multiple teams. So, we expect a quick support at that time so that we can do back out and so that we don't run into business hours, because it's like continuously we use heavily the mainframe MQ, and we just wanted to make sure that there's less outage even to the users when we do any upgrades. Thanks a lot for your support. I've been getting continuous very good support from you guys, but just wanted to know how it works during an upgrade.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. And I have one more question. Do you guys have any suggestions on the monitoring? Currently, the monitoring which we do is for error codes in the CSQE, in the syslog. we have an automation setup and we get IMRs, for, I mean, tickets for that. So do you guys have any suggestions around the monitoring stuff? Do you have any links or something for that? And do you guys have any suggestions on that, around it?
Are you asking about automated network operators or built-in MQ function for monitoring?
What I said, it was like built-in for it's for all products, and we are using for MQ as well in the syslogs. We just it does for high severity error codes, like which given in the MQ help saying that okay, suppose for dual login lost, those kind of stuff, we get the tickets as of now. So we have around 10 to I think 15 error codes which we monitor now and generate tickets automatically. So that's how it is.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm not familiar with any document that specifically deals with what to monitor. I don't know if anybody else on the call has a comment on it.
This is Rick. I think that Tivoli, you know, IBM Tivoli supplies all the monitoring tools for IBM. So we don't have MQ itself doesn't have any monitoring tools or that I'm aware of anyway.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. I mean, we are just doing it, from the syslog for any CSQ
right.
error codes. So, I mean, I was just wondering, like, is there anything which is already in place for MQ itself? So.
Yeah, not that we're aware of, no.
Okay.
You know what? I just thought of something that maybe that's something with the presentation we can put together for, you know, the pervasive error messages in the different areas. Maybe that's something we can come up with in a later presentation.
Thank you. I have one more question. Last year we have run into a situation wherein we were running a backup job for the page sets, and at the same time we tried to bring down our system because we have a monthly schedule for restarting of the mainframe, and we have run into a situation wherein the backup was running in the page set and the page set went offline during that shutdown, and it was an abnormal shutdown. And immediately when we started, it came up, but the next IPL, the next month, when we tried to bring down and bring up, there we ran into issues, and it was always trying to go to the tapes to take a backup. So is there anything like something which we can check it or proactively see, like, okay, nothing is running, and we can come, is there any command or something which we can just run and say that, okay, there is nothing using MQ at this point of time, and we can cleanly shut down or stop MQ? So, I just wanted to see, like, how we can avoid those kind of situations.
Yeah, I guess you might want to, see if you can come up with a procedure to use, like, the display threads commands and display con commands to see what sort of connections are to the queue manager, and make sure that, if you are going to bring the queue manager down, everything's kept within a good state of consistency so that the page set is in an expected state. But there are some commands, where you can just issue, what threads are outstanding, and then when those terminate normally, you can be safe to bring the queue manager down.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, normally at abnormal termination, things can end up being in an inconsistent state. So MQ will try to resolve any data inconsistencies when you go ahead and do restart. Typically, that's what we're able to do. But if you can be sure that there is no outstanding work, that's always safest when you do your backups.
Okay. Yeah, that time we ran into a situation wherein it was always going and we didn't see the older logs. Month-long logs, and we had to do a cold start of whole MQ, so it took a lot of time for us. So just wondering, what we can do to avoid those kind of...
Yeah, there are some things in the ZOS admin book that talk about, what can happen if you're using fuzzy backups, and there are some things in the troubleshooting sections of our books that talk about if you find, you get this particular error message, what you can try to do to recover from it. If you find you refer to those troubleshooting problem sections and they still don't resolve the problem, you can still always give us a call and we'll see if we can work through it or invoke level 3 to help try to figure out why you can't still recover the queue manager.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, sure.
And I have one final question. I see some tools, the tools for ZBus MQSCF. So, I mean, I just heard about it from my ZOS team. So, I mean, I don't know what it is. So, can you tell me, like, what are the tools for this MQSCF and what it is?
Are you talking about CSQ Util, or is that, I'm not sure which, because MQSC is really a set of commands you can issue that will handle any dynamic changes to the queue manager. So,
talking about the UFT keys, I mean, I don't know if you know about the UFT vendor which provides the tools for the various ZOS products for... Yeah, probably I'll check it, and if needed, probably I can raise a PMR on it. Not a problem.
Okay, you can email to us and let us know, and we can answer it that way.
Okay. Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marietta Woodard. Your line is open.
Hi. A quick question about the FTP program. I think it was the MFTP one that does the encryption and everything. I was just kind of curious, and I think I've asked this in the PMR before, but actually I'm not sure if we followed up with it or found a resolution. Seems that whenever we send a dump, it takes over an hour to even get that data sent. I was just wondering if that's been the experience of other customers, or is it something we need to revisit regarding that utility?
This is Rick. I haven't heard of anybody having performance issues using the tool. Are you talking about it just takes that long to FTP it, or it takes that long to terse it and FTP it?
The MFTP one, doesn't it, terse and encrypt? Yeah, to do that combined, it takes over an hour to send a dump. Now, sometimes when we take our dumps, we have a routine where we dump the master to chain and TCP/IP, but it's sometimes taking over an hour plus to get a dump transmitted.
No, I've not heard of anyone talking about that in any PMRs. But there may be a support for the MTFTP tool.
Thank you.
And we had no further questions.
Thank you, Jackie. And then I do have a question here coming in through the group chat from Gary. And his question is, he's just wondering what is the best resource to check compliance of MQ with COS 1.12.
This is Rick. Meaning that you have all the correct software in place, there is a system requirements link off of the support portal. So if you go to the support portal and you click on library, the next link that comes up will on the left-hand side, I believe the navigation on the left-hand side, I believe, has a system requirements link. So if you click on that link, it will take you to each WebSphere MQ release and what are the system requirements for ZOS and all the other platforms as well. So ZOS, so let's say if you have MQ 701, you click on that, and it'll tell you what ZOS releases are supported, what Kix releases are supported, DB2, and on down the line. I think that's probably the best place if I'm reading the question correctly.
Thank you, Rick. And it looks like we have no other questions at this point in time, so we will conclude the presentation.